This is the Enterprise Times podcast sponsored by Rootstock. My name is Steve Brooks, and today I'm talking to David Stevens, Chief Revenue Officer at Rootstock Software. We will be talking about selecting and implementing an ERP solution. We'll cover five broad themes: aligning the business strategy with the technological decision, who should be involved in the process itself, selecting a solution, and finally we'll talk about completing the process. David, hi.
Hello, Steve. Hey, so good to join you today, and thanks for having me. I'm really excited to be covering the topics that you mentioned. My experience in the ERP dates back, believe it or not, all the way to the very late 80s. Been engaged in a variety of different roles, probably hundreds of different ERP projects as I look back at different sized companies and a variety of different project level capacities, including the part of being the ERP technology provider on the side I am on with Rootstock today, and have been with other technology companies, but also with systems integrators, and probably most importantly, being on the client and the industry side, working with manufacturers, selecting ERP systems and implementing them as management inside manufacturing companies.
David, as a result of the current crisis, many organizations are looking to cloud software to replace their existing applications. Often they've got an ERP running on-premise in the corner of the office for over a decade. Replacing such a system is not a small undertaking, though. Many companies now look into cloud ERP solutions to replace their old system. Some companies may feel pressured with the hype that's in the press about this. Why should they look to replace, and how should they approach the point where they start the process?
I think your words are really important here, Steve. I don't think the fundamentals of why and how a business should be looking at changing ERPs should fundamentally change with the added pressure of the pandemic. But I think the when and the with what they should change their ERP has surely been influenced by the pandemic.
What do you mean by with what?
Well, as we go through these 5 points and we talk about the type of systems and the way in which customers are replacing them and driving back to the goals of the why and the how a business is looking at their strategy for replacing ERP and what do we require in an ERP system and why do we require it. Those fundamentals should stay focused on the business strategy and the objectives. What the pandemic has shown businesses is the types of systems that you choose can enable what has escalated in today's market around the pandemic in terms of remote workforces and potential permanent shifts to remote workforces and the desire to have those workforces connected, the ability to take advantage of connections to customers and suppliers with native capabilities and the systems that you choose and other considerations like that.
You mentioned business strategy there, and that's obviously important. When companies look to first buy an ERP system 10 or 15 years ago, and you look at business strategy today, there's a marked change on how companies should approach business strategy. Is there a way in which they should be thinking about business strategy today that is different from when they first bought their ERP system to automate their processes?
I do think there's a difference in our experience in working with clients today. They're really dealing in customer-centric marketplaces where all the traditional competitive measures of price and product availability, quality and service, those differentiators have really all been leveled on the playing field by so many competitors across so many industries. The clients we're talking to have to do everything possible in the strategies they develop to deploy and center on fine-tuning the benefit differentiation for their end client. How do we work from the customer backwards? In an ERP project, it's really a microcosm of the overall business. So you need to work from that customer differentiation backward to derive your objectives, to derive your scope, and what is your selection criteria going to be when looking in the ERP system, and what is your process going to be to implement and achieve those objectives?
If you're looking at customer centric, I assume you've also got to look at the modern business models such as servitization, which is coming more into vogue for manufacturers. What are the different business models that they need to consider?
Well, I definitely think that service and the elements of differentiation is where companies are focusing today. What customers want is a connected service experience. When companies are looking at how do they differentiate service with their customer? It's how do I collapse the cycle of servicing the customer and improve lines of communication with the customer to further differentiate that experience for the client? And that's where we see companies focused. Interestingly enough, we also see manufacturers deploying new types of capability that align more with things like recurring revenue models. Previously, I sold a physical product and it went out the door. Now I'm facing market pressure to provide a service with that physical product. And it's given manufacturers an opportunity to look at recurring revenue models, attaching service to the sale of the product. And that also drives new process requirements and new technology support requirements for clients.
And having a strategy means you need to set objectives. What are the top three objectives that businesses should set for this ERP strategy?
Number one, it revolves around exactly what we've been introducing here from the strategy on down to objective perspective, which is how does this effort positively impact my customer's experience and differentiate me from my competition? I think that needs to be number one. Number two, companies are always looking at technology as a way not only to improve the top line associated with that customer engagement, but improve the bottom line where possible. And so internal operating efficiencies while improving that customer experience is another key objective point. Those two are fairly high level. Obviously, then you need to take those objectives and drop them down into project. And how does that affect our requirements? How does it affect our selection? How does it affect our project plan and our go live and our metrics? Third item would really be around agility. It's having the business agility and creating the business agility to let you better serve your customer and empowering your teams with that agility as they provide that service.
We talked up front in terms of the second theme is around who should you involve in this process. So who should be involved in this process and why are they important?
Steve, these efforts most often succeed and fail from our experience on the basis of the C-suite sponsoring the project. So having active, consistent involvement of senior executives from the selection process through post-go-live is the biggest differentiator, singularly, that we see when assessing ERP projects that succeed versus those that fail. And I think to drive into a little bit more detail there, all too often we see senior executives involved early in a selection process to show support to their team. Then they come back in with the recommendation of the evaluation team to give the okay and be the participating signer in the agreements. The senior execs attend initial project kickoffs to show support and engage in initial senior steering committee meetings. And at this stage is where the road to success and failure related to this critical success contribution begin to split. When the top executive sponsor stays engaged and is available to quickly lend key decision-making support, keep vendors on task, motivate the team through many challenges of a project like this, the outcomes are generally successful when we look back at them. However, when the senior sponsor goes down the distant road of rear view mirror involvement, if you want to call it that, that results often in key decision-making delays that occur affecting the timelines and cost of the project. There's recovery time involved and escalations that have to occur when the executives aren't familiar with and have to be refreshed on those drivers within the project. And frankly, team morale, one of the biggest contributors to success or failure, plummets as they feel they're facing difficult project challenges without the required support. Moving through just on a couple other quick points there, you also see strong project managers and a project board having a huge day-to-day influence on the project. They're a key success factor as a liaison between those executive stakeholders and the core subject matter experts within the business, as well as a technical resource as part of those on-the-ground teams.
Part of that project board is obviously made up of other members within the organization. But who should be involved in the project as a whole? Who are the stakeholders that are important that you've seen in projects?
As I noted, that senior executive sponsor is one. And then you have to look at the scope of your project. So let's say you're doing a traditional end-to-end ERP. You're going to have senior sponsorship from the financial organization, typically the sales organization. Sometimes sales organization is also linked, depending on your organizational structure, customer operations. You've got key contributions for operations, whether that's management within operations itself, engineering, procurement, planning, manufacturing itself, and then the service teams. If they're not part of your customer operations teams, maybe there's a field service element to your business. Those can make up departmental organizations where you really need to see key management level, typically director level sponsorship. And then from there, it drives into the respective teams. And if you're dealing with a small business and going through this project, sometimes there's singular representation from multiple departments for someone who's been at the company and has worn multiple hats in the past. And then as you get to larger organizations, you're typically aligning the named resource with each of those respective roles.
Is there a value in adding customers or suppliers into that project team?
Oh, for sure, Steve. And it's an interesting, more recent phenomena where we see this concept engaged. And it's more recent because of the connected nature that companies are trying to drive value from in these new technologies. As you drive process improvement to affect customers and connected supply chain participants like suppliers and transportation providers and others into that experience, it's natural that you need them to be part of that engagement. Some of the successes we've seen here involve engaging them to an appropriate level, even in requirements definition, taking into account, for instance, the customer and the supplier's own capabilities to interconnect to these new technologies and also their willingness to participate and interconnect, and ultimately designing the solution around that for the different models that your customers and suppliers will in fact engage with you and actively participate in is important enough to involve them to ensure maximum success and really achieving value for all of the parties.
During most projects, you might want to involve some external people. How do you choose who you should involve, like a technological partner or a consultancy? What are the important questions you need to ask yourself? And once you've done that, what kind of partners should you look for?
There are some really good questions to determine your internal resource readiness to support the project and determine if you might need some of those different types of partner resources to support your implementation. You should evaluate and ask yourself, do you have your key requirements defined and your process goals outlined, and are they well documented and succinct to drive success through the project? Do you have the internal resources that are familiar with any project, all the way from selection to go live and post go live support? That's key. You really need to have resources that understand how to go about this and have the experience factor. And another one might be, do you have enough internal resources in terms of volume or resources to ensure success of the project all the way through? If you looked at those three questions and you're answering no to any of them, then you really need to consider looking to a third party to assist you in your process. You may choose a consultant or a consulting firm that specializes in ERP selections. If that's where you see the gap, they can augment and help guide you through that selection process. There are other firms that could stay further into the process and help you not only through selection, but all the way through the implementation, supporting missing resource gaps or experience capabilities. Keep in mind that these firms help you with resources, and the failure or success being the outcome of an ERP project is really up to you. They can't make key business decisions for you. That's still up to your team to really drive the business outcome. And you really have to have that mindset to ensure success, even when you're leveraging third parties for assistance.
How do you choose the right partner? How do you find them? How do you know that they are the right people to work with you?
Some good qualifiers there are, where is that? When you ask yourself those questions, where is the need? So for instance, if you've got somebody on your staff that has been part of a similar company to yours that's selected ERP 10 times in their career, and you feel really confident they can drive you through that, but what you're lacking is, let's say, overlays to your SME resources, you may need to go out and find a partner that specializes in deep subject matter expertise. If you're in manufacturing or services, and you're going to bring in consultants to overlay on top of your own resources so the day-to-day business can continue, but you're able to complete project tasks. We've seen companies that look for project management experience because they don't have the true driver in terms of a PM to support a project like this, which is a significant task. You could also need IT help. You could need technology help. And that technology help, in terms of which partner you choose, that might be a selection you make later in your implementation process because you may not know what your technology aligned with the ERP of choice is as you begin that process. So there's not only the who, but there's also the timing of when.
You're talking about what type of partner. Have you got any tip for actually making a decision about whether a partner you're looking at is the right partner for you?
I think there's a number of factors. Some of them are objective, like what's their industry experience that's similar to our industry? Have they done this 5 other times with companies that look and feel just like our company that have helped companies achieve the goals that they're looking for? There's those kinds of objective decision criteria, and there's also some more subjective ones. How does this partner go about this process, and how does that align to how our company operates? Things like communication and escalation, and what have their references said about their style of engagement, and are we a company that tends to be very direct about our objectives and our people are pretty flat out and that's the style that aligns well from a particular partner that we're talking to? Or do we need a little bit more kid gloves with our team and we tend to still get the job done, but we're a little friendlier or a little more casual about how we go through things? Those are more subjective feels. You need to align the culture of your potential partner with the culture of your company as well.
Malcolm Gladwell's recent book, Talking with Strangers, he talks about hiring a nanny. You don't interview the nanny. You interview the people who hired the nanny last to find out what they're like with their children. And it's the same with those consultants, isn't it? Interviewing a consultant, they may just be great at their pitching, but actually, are they good at the job? You're only going to find that out by talking to the references, not just the references they put forward, but also using your network to find out where else they worked and see what they're like.
Really valid point, for sure.
You talked earlier about ERP introduces efficiencies, but it's not quite like that now because cloud solutions have the potential to completely change processes, don't they? So how should manufacturers approach that?
I think we go back to some of the opening points about working from the customer backwards when we need to evaluate and consider process improvements with these types of projects. Businesses should evaluate process change first on the ability to create better customer experiences, which will help you grow the top line from a return perspective, and then evaluate those that provide operational efficiencies that contribute to improving the bottom line. I definitely think in our experience in talking to our customers that mistakes have been made where a customer got into too much of the mindset of we should change a process because we should change a process. And you kind of get into that mode of changing process for the sake of the change itself. But ERP projects and new technology adoption and improved project methodologies like Agile, they do provide interesting opportunities to implement processes that can have a dramatic impact on the experience you provide your customer. But they have to be chosen wisely, making sure that they're focused on driving those benefits.
There are a lot of different methodologies out there, things like design thinking, and you mentioned Agile, and obviously the traditional waterfall. And companies may also want to pilot solutions. What is an approach you think works well? Can you give an example where different approaches have worked well?
We obviously have recommended methodologies that we work with at Rootstock. I think if you look back over decades of ERP, as you noted, Steve, more traditionally ERP was viewed under a waterfall methodology. And I think the reason that drove that was because it was viewed as so monolithic across the business and people couldn't wrap their heads around how could we break this up. That's why waterfall was the chosen methodology for so many years in ERP. But what we found now with more aggressive forms of Agile and other methodologies, that more so from our perspective, the demand of the customer, the demand of the nature of the project, shortening life cycles of the project, shortening time to benefit, has driven companies to create hybrids. And in fact, our standard methodology that we work with customers on and so many of our partners work with customers on is more of a hybrid where understanding waterfall for the nature of ensuring that the foundation is established correctly. When you look at ERP, things like financial company setups and organizational structure setups, they have to be defined for the baseline of the foundation so that you can build the rest of the house. But then from there, you can start breaking it up and moving into an agile cycle where we're going to build out our sales processes and now we're going to build out our product processes and our manufacturing processes. And you can begin to chunk those out. And in many cases, the customers are actually choosing that blended approach to allow earlier phased go lives. In particular, it blends well as we move into this ERP market cycle that's so driven around new technologies and the capabilities of platforms that are combined with ERP, you're able to better leverage the technology and taking advantage of what has become the more traditional agile methodologies within technology today. So you get, for instance, I'm going to build out a unique business process tied to my ERP for taking customer orders. I want this done in 2 weeks, which is a traditional agile cycle. I'm going to use the core of the ERP, but then the user experience for my customer service teams or the connected experience we have to our web stores are going to be designed and managed in that agile cycle. And we've seen many customers take on that type of approach, and it's an effective blend that really drives success in the projects.
One of the things about ERP projects nowadays, or what's critical within them, is change management and communication across the business. How important is that? How should companies approach change management?
As you said, moving to a new ERP system represents huge changes for almost everyone within an organization, not just the users of the ERP system, but as well non-users or limited users that are still affected by the business process changes that come with improvements and goals that the business wants to achieve that'll happen with the go live of a new system. So with the advent of today's best-in-class ERP systems enabling connected experiences with customers and vendors, there's even other parties outside of the organization that are brought into the change management fold. But you touched on that before when you talked about, is it wise to bring other third parties into the mix for these types of projects? So a must with change management is that it's included throughout the effort as part of the foundation of the project. And we've seen that as a core tenet that really differentiates effective change management from ineffective change management. Too many times deciding 30 days before go live as you prepare for end user training that you should start prepping some change management initiatives centered on your end users is far too limited and far too late to really maximize success and the positive impact that change management can have on your ERP go live.
And when you come to selecting an ERP, can I misquote George Orwell here? All cloud ERPs are equal, but some are more equal than others. Cloud ERP has been around for a long time, and everyone says, I've got a cloud ERP. But what are the actual differences between cloud ERPs? What should people look for?
It's a really interesting question. For decades, ERPs touted certain bits of functionality that were better than their competitors for certain customer fits. In today's mature ERP marketplace, I think core functionality has become really table stakes in our space. Where we see the market evolving is that ERP valuations for businesses are focused on industry capability and experience, the trust factor of knowing that your chosen vendor has done this before with a number of players in your space. From a technology perspective, we see synonyms evolving between ERP and platform. And if companies are truly deciding on a next generation ERP that's going to last them several decades, as ERP system investments typically do, and that's the expectation of the market, you need to be choosing a platform that you know is going to continue to help you differentiate and frankly be around and be supported from a technical perspective for decades to come. And I think that's where some of the concepts of modern cloud and those kinds of things come in. There's so much focus in the marketplace today around that phrase, digital transformation. Anecdotally, over my career, it's probably been one of the fastest phrases to evolve and then dissipate that I've seen, just because it went from the latest craze to clients don't want to hear it anymore because it's so overused. But frankly, I think that's a bit of a shame. As you talk about platform and you talk about those transformation opportunities, it's actually one of the core concepts with these transformations that a well-designed and well-delivered effort here do focus on further differentiating your customer's experience by better connecting you, your customers, your supply chain, and leveraging connected processes internally as well to drive efficiencies.
In the same way I'm seeing cloud used and misused over decades, almost decades anyway, and digital transformation has been used and misused over years, platform is becoming a popular word in the same way. So what makes a platform stand out?
When you look at platform and you look at the companies that are doing their best to come from a legacy environment and migrate, at least by words and marketing pitch, and you know, if you want to call it technology band-aids or however else you might look at it, when they're trying to transform their own offerings, but they're truly not built from the ground up or re-engineered from the ground up on concepts like multi-tenant open architectures, meaning they're not just taking their old technology and repurposing it on a distributed hosted platform. That in today's world is commonly phrased cloud, but it's not true next generation technology. It still means that all the behind the scenes and everything that's not presented to your user through the UX is still based on old architected technology. It limits the connectivity, it limits the process improvements, it limits a lot of the things that your customers are demanding that you provide them. Whereas multi-tenant next generation technologies that'll be the standard for decades to come, that's where we see customers shifting their decision as they become more and more knowledgeable about where is the real meat in these words, cloud and platform, and how is it different from essentially the pretenders versus the real players, if you will. You know, in addition to those concepts of multi-tenant platform underpinnings, there's also the evolution of this concept of something that's really revolutionizing the way that companies can implement ERP and create processes and very quickly move to use cases. And that's the implementation of low-code enabled platforms. And by low-code, we're basically saying that what used to have to sit within the IT organization and go through a software development lifecycle and be deployed, and it was costly to maintain and costly to change, has now become an empowerment within these latest generation of platform capabilities, where low-code concepts of enabled power users can essentially drive workflows and user experiences in simple clicks without code methods, where visually they're able to depict business processes, for instance, and then deploy those business processes, still adhering to the core of the ERP tenets that are required. So, for instance, the controllers and the accountants and the organizations can still count on the outcome of financials in the traditional ERP ways. But the way to get there was most efficiently deployed for that customer very quickly, oftentimes in just a few hours. A company can implement a new low-code methodology for a process adoption. And one of the most powerful use cases there is they can connect it to third parties as well. So when we talk about focusing this ERP experience on the customer, you can do that low-code implementation, but then it's immediately accessible for a customer where they come into play, or a supplier, if you're talking about the supply chain side of the equation.
And finally, we mentioned that ERP projects used to be waterfall. You spent months, if not years, implementing the ERP, and when you finally done, you just breathed a sigh of relief and went on, did something else. That's not the approach that people need to take today, is it?
It's not. There's really a focus on time to benefit with these types of projects, and it evolves around really being smart about your scope and your definition of the project and how you can chunk the project up. As you said, ERP traditionally has been viewed as a monolithic, large, multi-year project. And yet in today's world, from a time to benefit perspective, when we talk about the IT initiatives that companies want to take on and what they're willing to invest in, they want to talk about weeks of time to benefit, or at most months to time to benefit. And so as these technologies come to bear and you're able to implement with different methodologies, like we were talking about before, get your structure right with a hybrid and then move into agile phasing, it really enables the ability for a business to improve time to value and reduce time to go live. And I think one of the things when we talk about common thread here through this discussion related to process and scope is that benefits and payback from the investment your company makes in an ERP is only realized with a go live. And that's been a poison pill to so many ERP projects, is just not focusing on the fact that getting live, even if it's an initial go live with many follow-on phases and looking at it as a continual process of improvement, has been death to so many of these projects. To use an analogy, when you get excited about having your favorite home-cooked meal and you've been working on preparing it all day, what you don't realize is you get to sit down to eat and you realize you're missing perfect napkins. And so you wait and you say, hey, I got to run out to the store and get some perfect napkins, or worse yet, the meal spoils and you come back to eat and there's nothing there to eat. That concept of realizing where the focus is and getting live is really something that companies need to focus on. And there are tons of opportunities to do this in a phase model with those types of methodologies and just continue driving incremental benefits from the project as follow-ons.
When you say go live, are you talking about delivering a minimum viable product in a sense that replaces the old legacy systems? Because a lot of people have got a lot of costs tied up in those legacy systems.
At times it does revolve around an MVP concept, but it doesn't necessarily have to stop there. Meaning that with the implementation methodologies and the capabilities, let's say that you do a really strong requirements analysis and you realize that 2 years of initial multi-phased go-lives essentially are going to be what you're going to target. But you want to be live in 5 months, as an example. You could analyze your existing processes and say, look, 40% of our current processes are manual. We're going to leave those manual for the initial transformation to set the foundation. And so this concept of an MVP may involve those core elements and maybe a few added benefits that come into critical processes for phase one and your first go live. But the holistic view says, okay, we're live. We've got that nailed down. We didn't continue to try to suck more and more and more of those things we want to improve into that MVP. We stayed disciplined. We got live. And then we rolled forward with multiple follow-on phases.
So do you ever finish a cloud ERP project? That's such a leady question, I know, sorry, but it's a good question too.
Yeah, it is. I love it because the natural tendency is to say you shouldn't view it as finished because there's so much you can always do. And we know in every business, change is a constant. I think it's the empowerment that these new ERP systems and new platform capabilities offer that drive the ability actually to not view it as we're done, but instead to view it as we started. And then we've got a true continual process of improvement and change that we can now move into. We have customers that have been live for 10 years that are still dealing with us on improving their process. And it's not just about improving process, but it's also about responding to changes. A decade to lifetime in today's world, I would argue that your customers are going to demand new things annually or even less in the speed of life cycles in today's business. So yes, there's a focus on go live from the sense of having a start and setting the foundation. But from that point forward, it really is better to view it as a process of continual opportunity realization.
As a multi-tenant cloud vendor, you're delivering changes every week or every month, and certainly some major changes every year that they can take advantage of, aren't you?
Sure are. And in fact, being on a modern technology cloud platform like Salesforce, which Rootstock is based on, the customer's never alienated, ever. You know, so many customers who looked at trying to implement these kinds of process improvements or unique customer experiences in legacy technology ended up locked in to a version. They couldn't upgrade. They couldn't move forward, not only from a technology perspective, but from an application perspective. And they're left with remnants and customization, and they're alienated and orphaned. In this world today, with these modern cloud technology platforms, you're taking on new upgrades consistently. On a timed basis, you have every opportunity to test them and to make sure they fit the process and meet the requirement, even in validated businesses like med device and health and life sciences and aerospace and defense. These customers can still drive through the deployment of upgrades on a, like you said, an annual basis for major features, semi-annual basis, that kind of timeline, but they'll never be alienated. 2 decades from now, they'll still be operating in a system that's just been continually updated, even with the business process customizations that they do today and those that they do a decade from now.
David, thank you very much.
Thank you, Steve.